investigators behind them. Orthan lunged to plug one of the gaps, his great mace obliterating the scythe-wielding ghost that came sweeping through the breach shield wall. Arnholt rushed to another gap, his staff crackling with arcane power as he drove it through the ghostly head of another wraith that tried to exploit the lapsed defence. Nerio ran to plug the final hole.
Hawk!
He shouted to his men as he hurried to confront the beast-headed phantom that flew into the middle of their formation. While the castigators turned to loose their maces into the mass of wraiths converging on the left flank, Nerio moved against the glaive-wielding ghost. The thing slashed at him with its weapon, missing him by such slight measure that he could feel the chill of its necrotic blade rush through him. In response, he brought his great bow up and shot a mace through its chest and up into its skull. The bestial ghost disintegrated in a flash of crackling energy and burning shadows.
"Sigma, protect and defend!"
Arnholt's voice sang out.
"Sigma, smite and avenge!"
The Night Incantor's body briefly glowed with etheric energies as he tapped into the arcane storm and focused his will upon it. An instant later, a tremendous gale descended upon the plateau, lashing across the plain with tempestuous force. Entire clutches of wraiths were buffeted by the punishing winds, shredded by the elemental force unleashed upon them. Phantasmal tatters writhed through the dark sky as the wraiths lost cohesion.
"Quickly!"
Arnholt shouted to the sacrosancts. He gestured with his staff towards the patch of greenery.
"Forwards!"
Nerio ordered his troops, urging them to haste. Pentheus too spurred his sequiturs onwards, seizing the advantage that had been gained.
A momentary advantage.
Nerio could see a grey phantom flitting about the plain, a ghoulish lantern clenched in its hands. Wherever its cadaverous light shone, the tattered wraiths began to coalesce, while more of their number came bubbling up from the cursed earth. It would not be long before a revivified undead legion came sweeping down upon them once more. Nerio had served with Arnholt before and knew something of the toll the Night Incantor's spells took on him. He would not easily be able to conjure another gale to batter the Nighthaunts a second time. Moreover, as he looked ahead, he could see the Shrouded King moving his own forces to intercept them. The wraith had conjured another steed for himself, this time an assemblage of equine bones that exuded a gibbous glow. Around him, a carder of spectres, wielding long scythes and with blindfolds lashed about their faces, came shrieking and howling towards the stormcasts.
"Eagle!"
Nerio shouted, but this time when the castigators loosed their missiles, the wraiths were hardly disturbed by the explosive detonations. Instead, an eerie green light enveloped them and absorbed the very worst of the blast. Sabrot laughed as his undead soldiers came surging onwards.
"Return to the graves which are your rest,"
Arnholt shouted. Standing behind the sequiturs, he aimed his staff at the charging mass of Nighthaunts. A deafening thunderclap boomed across the plateau, its force hurling the wraiths back with hurricane force. Sabrot alone defied the power of Arnholt's spell, his steed digging in its hooves and sliding back across the lifeless earth for several feet before the intensity of the storm was expended. By then, it was too late. Only a few yards separated the hammers of Sigmar from the patch of greenery they had been striving to reach.
"For the Heldenhammer!"
Arnholt cried, as he dashed through the ranks of the sequiturs and made for the one spot on all the plateau that had resisted the malignity of the Necroquake and the spells of Sabrot. Nerio was not sure what he had expected to happen when they actually reached that spot. Some infusion of divine energies, perhaps. Some aura of holy protection that would render them immune to the ravages of the undead. None of that happened. Instead, Arnholt just stood there for a moment. There was a strange look in his eyes, an expression Nerio had never seen there before. But whatever strange spell held him, it quickly abated. When it was gone, Arnholt did not rejoin the stormcasts. Instead, he turned towards the Shrouded King.
"I know who you are,"
Arnholt hissed, and in his voice there was a measure of hate and rage that chilled even Nerio's heart. The Shrouded King whipped his steed around and galloped into the huge cairn. Arnhold howled in fury and charged after the wraith, pursuing him towards the tomb.
"Arnhold! My lord! Come back!"
Nerio shouted after the knight incantor.
"Castigator Prime Nerio!" Pentheus snapped.
He swung around to see the other Stormcast glowering at him.
"The undead are regathering their strength. They will attack soon. I task you with holding them back."
Nerio shook his head.
"Me? But you are senior in rank. You should be in command."
Pentheus had already broken ranks and was hurrying after Arnhold.
"You are in command," he called over his shoulder. "I have to help Arnhold."
Nerio watched him go, then glanced at the patch of greenery. What was that place? And what had it done to the knight in Cantor? He set aside those questions as the spectral horde came sweeping towards them once more.
"Close ranks," he commanded. "Sequiturs, hold the line. Castigators, be ready to loose on my mark."
Chapter 5. A fury such as Arnhold had never known roared through his heart. Standing upon the small plot of grassy earth had opened him to something. He could not say if the images that seared through his mind were drawn into him from outside or borne to his awareness by some deep forgotten fragment of his psyche. Whatever their source, the effect was like being struck by a thunderbolt. He no longer merely felt the name Volkard belonged to him. He knew he was Volkard. Arnhold could see the barren plain around him as it had been long ago, on that day when he'd led his army at the head of his household guard against the hordes of chaos. He saw again the horde of marauders and monsters as they came charging up onto the plateau. He braced his forces. It was here, and here alone, they had any chance of stopping the invaders and protecting the heartland of Khaza. Here, the awesome numbers of the Chaos Horde could not be brought to bear. Here, it would be the quality of the warriors and the righteousness of their cause that would prevail. So it might have been. But Arnhold knew the strategy was doomed from the first, doomed by treachery. Before battle was joined, a dark shadow appeared atop the stony rise and cast his foul spells upon the field, magics steeped in the deathly energies of Shaiish. A moment of terror and pain, the strangled cries of thousands of warriors, and then nothing. The battle lost, for none were left to fight it. The dark shadow had a name, one that spurred the fire in Arnhold's soul. Sabrot the Usurper, the undead filth that dared now proclaim itself the Shrouded King. Arnhold pursued as Sabrot retreated into his mouldering tomb. Before, it had been duty and necessity that drove him to confront the wraith, his obligations to the people of Wyrmdid and his devotion to Sigmar. Now he pursued Sabrot for far different reasons. He knew what this creature had done and what his fell deed had cost the people of Khaza. These were crimes that Arnhold would see avenged. The scythe-wielding spectres came flying towards Arnhold, seeking to intercept him before he could overtake Sabrot. The knight incantor pointed his staff at one of the skull-faced haunts, a pulse of lightning snaking away from its glowing head to rip through the shadowy creature and reduce it to a foul-smelling smoke. Another of the fiends rushed for him, slashing its scythe through his helm. Arnhold whispered one of the arcane songs he had been taught, and sent a punishing gale of wind tearing across the ghost, scattering its essence across the battlefield. The knight incantor dealt with the other ghostly reapers in similar fashion, destroying or rebuffing them with his magic. Such was the anger driving him onwards that he gave no thought to conserving his energies, or what the toll taken by so hurried and rapid a string of conjurations might be. Once he thought he heard Pentheus calling after him, warning him against so reckless a course. But Arnhold ignored the cries. None of that mattered now. All that mattered was Sabrot and meting out upon the wraith the justice he had escaped for so many centuries. Baleful wards guarded the Shrouded King's tomb. Arnhold could see a red haze flickering before the entrance. He paused for only an instant, then he clenched his staff and pointed it at the virulent light. His head reeled at the terrible strain as he willed his arcane powers to pierce the eldritch barrier. The prudent action would be to slowly unwind the enchantments that shaped the ward, unraveling them gradually until they were harmless, Such caution would mean time, however, and Arnholt would spare none for Sabrot's reckoning. The barrow mound was a great heap of jumbled stone, its entrance a gash in its face, framed by heavy blocks of marble carved into macabre figures. As Arnholt strove to penetrate the warding haze, he could see the eyes of stone ghouls and geists smouldering with profane energies. Feeding more power into the wards, the carved guardians began to shiver, trembling as though an earthquake shook the plateau. Arnholt poured more of his own magic into the effort to break the guarding spell. Liquid dripped down his forehead, and only when he tasted it on his lips did he realize it was not more perspiration, but blood sheening his skin. Such was the strain. His ears rang with a maddening cadence. His vision became awash with the red haze of the ward, so that he was all but blind. A mortal wizard would have been crippled by the stresses Arnholt was allowing his body to endure, much less the fantastic exertion necessary to maintain the ordeal. Bit by bit, Arnholt pushed through the haze. Each step he felt the hostility of the ward increase. Through the red blur, he could see chips of stone cracking away from the carvings as their quaking became more and more violent. Finally, he was through. It occurred with such abruptness that Arnholt found himself lunging into the darkness of Sabrot's barrow. Behind him, the chipped residue of the carvings clattered to the ground, shaken into fragments by their struggle to defy the Night Encantor's determination.
"Praise Sigmar," Arnholt intoned, thanking the God King for granting him the power to break through the wards. Only for a moment did he pause within the entrance. Then, conjuring a golden glow to surround the head of his Sigmarite staff and illuminate his way, Arnholt hastened into the tomb's murky halls. The inside of Sabrot's barrow had a musty, decayed stench. The reek of old bones was omnipresent, as was the stink of soil from which all vitality had been drained. Even with Arnholt's spell to light his way, the corridor was cloaked in gloom and shadow. He would almost be upon some niche in the wall before he was able to discern the sarcophagus of an ancient king or valiant knight. There were places where faded murals and tattered tapestries ran along the hallway, their artistry now wasted almost to the point of oblivion. The hall angled sharply downwards, plunging ever deeper into the cursed earth beneath the mound. The further he penetrated the tomb, the more Arnholt felt a crushing weight pressing upon him. Not the mass of stone above, but rather an emotional pollution that perverted the atmosphere, a miasma of misery and bitterness that dragged at him with almost physical force, the contagion left behind by the shrouded king's festering thoughts. Arnholt hesitated when a dust-veiled mural caught his notice. Singing a minor cantrip, he sent a blast of wind across the wall, driving away the dirt and revealing the image hidden beneath the patina. What stood exposed was a scene of the heroine, Sophira, with her obsidian spear embedded in the primary head of the Hydra, Rast. A shiver coursed through Arnholt, a tremor that magnified the fury he already knew. It was not the memory of the ancient legend that upset him, but rather the memory of where he had seen this mural before. It had adorned the royal palace of Khaza. The Night Encantor quickened his pace, no longer caring that he might trigger some trap left behind by Sabrot to guard his tomb. Aware now that the Shrouded King had violated the royal palace to decorate his grave, Arnholt began to see other pieces that should have been in the home of the priest kings. With each discovery, his outrage at the usurper's effrontery was redoubled. By the time Arnholt reached the center of the tomb, to that great hall where Sabrot had built his morbid imitation of Khaza's throne room, he was ready to tear the barrow mound apart stone by stone. When he saw this ultimate profanation of the royal house, he was overwhelmed, sickened by the macabre scene. The dragon seat, from which the monarchs of Khaza had ruled the land, now dragged down into a cobwebbed crypt deep beneath the earth. The shadow that reposed on the dragon seat stirred, turning the smouldering fires in its skull towards Arnholt. There was scorn in that gaze, the smug defiance of a thief confronted with his crime. Arnholt glared back at Sabrot. "You are in my chair."
Cold malice flowed through the essence of Sabrot, permeating every corner of his spectral being. The purity that Arnholt exuded, the taint of Azir that emanated from his golden armor, stung the wraith's senses, an irritation that at once both vexed and provoked. And the Shrouded King was already provoked. His ire had been roused the moment he had recognized Volkard in Wormdit.
"I looked for you among the dead, Volkard,"
Sabrod hissed.
"How long and earnestly I probed the underworlds, seeking your spirit."
He raised a fleshless hand and pointed at the knight in Cantor.
"Now I understand why you were not there. Sigmar stole you from Great Nagash and made you one of his mindless puppets."
Arnholt raised the Sigmarite staff he bore and shook it at the sneering apparition.
"You will not profane the name of the God King, usurper."
At his gesture, a bolt of lightning flared through the gloomy hall. Sabrod did not stir from the throne. There was no need. The lightning fizzled before it could come near to him, shattering into a cascade of flickering sparks.
"How much the God King has taken from you, wretch!"
he snarled, his hand sliding across the arms of the throne.
"This is the dragon seat, enchanted by the Magi of Yordo to defend the royal blood against all spells that would render him harm. You should know these things, Volkard. It is useless to turn your magic against the priest-king of Khaza."
"Then I will pull you down from your stolen throne with my bare hands," Arnholt growled.
He rushed towards the dragon seat. A burst of deathly power threw the stormcast back, repelling him as completely as the arcane lightning he had conjured. Arnholt staggered, his golden armor singed by the repulsing force.
"The dragon seat protects the king from assassins."
Sabrod's ghoulish tone descended into a hateful snarl.
"Even those assassins who were once kings."
The last word was poison in Sabrod's mouth, forcing him to concede that there had been a time when Volkard ruled Khaza. It was a memory hateful to him, so he decided to evoke one he sensed would be just as unsettling to the Stormcast. He leered at Arnholt, willing his spectral essence to rebuild for a moment the face that had once rested upon his skull.
"Have you forgotten even this?"
Sabrod asked, at once shocked and disgusted by Arnholt's response, his lack of agitation at gazing on the wraith's mortal visage.
"Can so much of who you were have been taken from you?"
Sabrod could see the Stormcast's confidence falter. He saw the glimmer of confusion in Arnholt's eyes, just as the name of Volkard had drawn together the scattered fragments of memory, so now did the knight in Cantor react to the dragon seat.
"I was furious when your spirit escaped from me,"
Sabrod said.
"When the power of Nagash raised me from my grave, I sought you, but you are not to be found. Even the spot where you died has defied my influence."
A scornful hiss rattled up from the wraith's essence.
"Now I see there was no reason to be angry. Sigmar has done far worse to you than I should ever have imagined. He has stripped your identity and left you naught but a hollowed shell. A zombie that deludes itself into believing it is still a man."
Arnholt shook his head, revulsion in his eyes. "Brother," was the word that dripped from his tongue. Sabrod rose up from the throne.
"Yes, brothers!"
He pointed to his phantasmal face.
"A visage, the very mirror of your own. But for the accident of a few heartbeats, I would have been king. But it was you who was drawn from mother's flesh first. I was but a contingency, trained only as successor, in case you should perish. Mine was a shadow existence of observing all that could have been mine, yet knowing that it would never be."
He clenched his bony fists, the loathing he felt causing his phantom features to vanish and leave only the fleshless skull.
"So long as you were alive, I was nothing."
The Stormcast glared at Subrod.
You are still nothing, he jeered. You don't even have a body, a twisted spirit, too wretched to rest in its tomb. No!
Sabrot's roar boomed through the hall. He stretched his arms wide and exerted his hideous will. From the darkness, shadows gathered.
I rule here now! Gaza is mine! Everything is mine!
He glanced from side to side as the night haunts took shape and began to surround the Stormcast.
I am the Shrouded King! It is you, Volkard, who are nothing!
Sabrot gestured to one of the wraiths, a thin apparition draped in black with the crossbeam of a gallows lashed to its back. At this gesture, a billowing mass of darkness spread across the ghost's hands, hardening until it had taken the appearance of a gleaming double axe.
You will die, Stormcast. My executioner will cut the gilded head from your shoulders, and this time we will see if Sigmar can cheat Nagash of your soul.
By volley! Loose! Nerio shouted as the black cloud of wraiths came rushing against the Stormcasts once more. The explosive maces detonated only a few feet from the crouching sequiturs, sending crystalline shards clattering against their soul shields. Dozens of the shadowy ghosts were ripped apart in the impact. Those at the center of the blast were banished entirely, their essence consumed by the Stardrake's breath within. The wraiths on the periphery of the explosions, however, were not completely destroyed. Scattered by the maces, Nerio did not believe the chain-draped phantoms could have reunited their essence on their own. Certainly not as quickly as they did. It was the ghastly corpse light held by one of the spectres that was infusing the wraiths with such power. Almost as soon as the sound of the explosions was fading, the disincorporated ghosts were taking shape once more and converging upon the hammers of Sigmar.
We could beat them back, brother, if it were not for that accursed lantern!
Orthan snarled to Nerio as he hastened to the latest breach in the shield wall. His great mace came cracking down upon the phantasmal skull of a scythe-bearing wraith, shattering the creature in a burst of necrotic vapor. The sequitur the undead had sliced with its ghostly blade struggled for a moment to rise, and then collapsed. An instant later, he vanished in a bright flash of light, his spirit drawn back into the keeping of Sigmar. Nerio aimed his thunderhead greatbow and sent an explosive shot crashing through the wraiths that came rushing towards Orthanc. The apparitions vanished in a cloud of celestial energy. Before any others could charge the breach, the remaining sequiturs repositioned themselves to repair the shield wall. Several of the sacrosanct Stormcasts had been dragged down by the Nighthaunts, and with each loss, the space within the formation became ever tighter. Orthan was having difficulty maneuvering and reaching the gaps. Soon there would not be room enough for all of Nerio's castigators to remain behind the protection of the sequiturs.
They will wear us down if we continue to fight them this way!
Nerio looked past Orthan to where the pale wraith and its ghoulish lantern continued to draw spirits from the dead earth and reshape the ones struck down by the Stormcasts. Arnholt had pursued the Shrouded King. Perhaps without their undead lord, the rest of the Nighthaunts would lose their foothold in Gur and fade back to the underworlds. But for such an event to help the Hammers of Sigmar, they would have to keep from being overwhelmed.
By Sigmar, we will hold!
Nerio vowed. He gestured towards the lantern-bearing spectre.
Either we will be the doom of that fiend, or it will be the doom of us!
He looked across the sequiturs and castigators, proud that these warriors would accept his command, even if it was far from anything to be found in the martial strictures Pentheus knew by heart.
It does no good to hold position here. On my mark, we will make a drive for that corpse-calling wretch. I want 10 castigators to alternate with the sequiturs in the vanguard. As you shoot, fall back and allow one of your brothers to take your place. Sequiturs will defend you as best they can. It will need speed and boldness to prevail. If the lamp-bearer flees before us, we must catch it, or we gain nothing.
Holding his thunderhead great bow high, Nerio shouted to the Stormcasts.
For Sigmar! For the Heldenhammer! To glory and victory!
On his command, the Stormcasts shifted positions. A wave of oncoming wraiths were surprised by the reformation, extinguished by the concentrated volley of crystal-headed maces that shot out at them the instant they came near the shield wall. The first castigators fell back, letting warriors with loaded greatbows take their place. The redeployment happened even as the armored warriors marched across the plateau, none of them missing a step. The Nighthaunts came at the stormcast from all sides. The sequiturs on the flanks and rear were especially hard-pressed to hold off the undead assault, for this time there was no withering volley from the castigators to break the attack. There was no alternating glow of maul and shield as the sequiturs made their reprisals upon the Nighthaunts. Now the soul shields maintained a steady illumination as the stormcasts focused their energies entirely upon defense. Trying to present an unbroken front against which the wraiths would crash, they lost the versatility that had served them before. One by one, sequiturs were pulled down, stabbed by glaives and scythes that managed to slip past the warding shields. Nerio felt the fall of each stormcast like a knife twisting in his guts. He knew they were being brought down because of his change in tactics, but he also knew that if they didn't change tactics, then they would not be victorious. The Lampbearer had to be vanquished if they were to prevail.
"Castigator Prime!"
one of the sequiturs in the vanguard cried out.
"The Ghostmaster knows our plan! It is sending even more wraiths to intercept us!"
Nerio looked to Orthanc.
"I think it will need something even more unexpected and reckless to carry the day," he said. "I should appreciate your aid."
Orthanc nodded and hefted the bulk of his great mace.
"Show me where you want violence."
Nerio gathered a group of 10 castigators.
"Hold back, and do not rotate with the others," he told them.
To the rest of the stormcasts, he gave different instructions.
"We will rotate archers 3 more times. On the 4th rotation, the front rank will drop down as they loose. Then the reserves will open up. You're going to cut a tunnel through the wraiths for myself and Orthanc to reach the Lampbearer."
Nerio and Orthanc kept in the center of the formation as the gilded sphere advanced towards the spectre. The wraiths came rushing the stormcast from each direction, attacking with a vengeance. More sequiturs were dragged from the line, and even a few of the castigators in the van were brought down. Then came the moment for the double volley Nerio had arranged. The front rank dropped to one knee once the 4th rotation was in place. 2 lines of castigators sent a withering hail of thunderhead maces into the tide of undead. Those in the 4 were extinguished in flashes of brilliant light. Behind them, scores more were immolated by the draconic energy. The shreds of those blown apart in the first volley evaporated completely by the explosions from the second. A gap 10 paces wide had been opened in the wave of Nighthaunts. Into this fissure, Nerio and Orthanc plunged. The sequitur led the way, sweeping his great mace through the few wraiths that moved to block their charge. The apparitions were battered by their heavy weapon, their ethereal substance ripped apart. There was no chance to make certain of their dissolution as the 2 stormcasts hastened onwards, leaving their undead foes to reform behind them as the necromantic light summoned them back to battle. There was no going back for Nerio and Orthanc. A spectral mass of ghosts now separated them from their brothers. Only by pressing on could they gain anything at all. Both could see the Lampbearer ahead. The spectre appeared to recognize their threat. It raised its skeletal arms and beckoned to a clutch of glaive-armed wraiths. The apparitions came howling towards the 2 stormcasts, determined to keep them from reaching the corpse caller.
"Do not tarry,"
Orthanc told Nerio. Without explaining himself, he intercepted the stalking wraiths. His great mace came cracking down on the skull of one, extinguishing it in a blaze of dark vapor and divine light. A second stalker was subdued by Orthanc's fury, its essence bludgeoned by the glowing weapon. Such was the havoc unleashed by Orthanc that the other stalkers deviated away from Nerio and converged upon the sequitur. From all sides, the piercing glaives came slashing for him. As the doomed Orthanc had warned, Nerio did not tarry. Accepting the sequitur's sacrifice, he hurried onwards towards the fleeing Lampbearer. At the very limit of effective range, Nerio raised his great bow and took aim. The spectre glared back at him with the graveyard glow that shone from the shadows of its hooded face. It raised the grisly lamp higher, beckoning, commanding the restless dead of the plateau to rally to its aid. Nerio felt all the creature's undying hate smash down on him in a surge of wrath. Then the Castigator Prime shot the mace from his great bow. The missile spun across the haunted field, narrowly flying over the cowled heads of the undead as they rose from the earth. The crystal tip of the mace whistled past the heavy lantern, causing its light to flicker. Then it slammed into the shadow-veiled head of the corpse caller. The unleashed storm breath billowed out in a nimbus of purifying power. The specter gave voice to a piercing wail of despair as the celestial energy devoured it, collapsing its tenuous bond with the corporeal world. Like a puff of smoke, the phantom vanished, its extinguished lamp crashing to the earth alongside its empty cloak. As the lamp's light faded, so too did the ghost that had been rising from the earth. Like mist before a strong wind, they drifted apart, seeping back down into the cursed soil. Nerio was comforted by the knowledge that there would be no unending tide of reinforcements for the Night Haunts now. That only left the multitudes of enraged undead already upon the battlefield. Nerio turned from the residue left by the lamp-bearer to see the rat-skulled stalkers finish Orthan. Pierced by the ghostly glaives many times, the sequitur lost his hold upon the great mace. Even as the weapon crashed to the ground, the stormcast's life ebbed away. In a blinding flare of light, his spirit was drawn back to Azir. Their prey gone, the stalking wraiths remembered the other foe they were supposed to destroy. Too late to help the lamp-bearer, they now came rushing to avenge the spectre by dealing with Nerio as they had with Orthan. Nerio fitted another thunderhead mace to his great bow. How many of the undead horrors would he vanquish before they could reach him? Arnholt watched as the spectral headsman emerged from the circle of night haunts. The murderous axe glistened in the wraith's grip, its edge alight with fell enchantments. Sabrot had spoken true. There was death in that blade. Perhaps even death for a stormcast.
There was a moment when you too knew the menace of this axe, Arnholt told Sabrot.
A thrust in the dark, an informed guess based upon what he had learned of the spectre. For him, as a stormcast, the past was only hazy fragments. For the Shrouded King, the past was an obsession, a pattern from which he could not extricate himself. The thrust struck home. Furious light glowed in the sockets of Sabrot's skull. The wraith shook a bony talon at Arnholt.
I spit on your pity, Sabrot hissed. I rejected it when it was offered. I warned you of what would happen, brother. I warned you that the dragon seat would be mine.
Sabrot's tirade stirred some of the disjointed fragments buried within Arnholt's memory. He saw again the scene as it had unfolded long ago. He recalled the reasons he had spared Sabrot the first time he had tried to seize the throne.
It was not for your sake I did not send you to the headsman. Your wife and my nephews pleaded for your life. They begged me to spare you, and I was too selfish to risk earning their scorn, to see hate for me in their eyes.
You were weak, Sabrot scoffed. Too weak to rule.
You were the weak one, Arnholt countered, always letting others take the risks. You could not even do your own fighting. You had to let the hordes of chaos do that for you. A conqueror, a usurper, you are nothing but a scavenger, afraid to fight for what you want.
Sabrod's laugh was a steely growl that echoed through the tomb.
You will not goad me into leaving the dragon seat, however much you try to shame me. I will sit here and be content to watch you die.
The ghastly executioner rushed Arnholt. The stormcast lifted his staff to block the descending axe. In a blur of eerie speed, the ghost's weapon swept past his defense and crashed against his shoulder. There was an icy shock as the spectral blade struck him. His arm dropped, numbed down to his wrist. It was all he could do to retain his grip upon the staff. In another fit of uncanny speed, the ghostly headsman pulled away and brought his double axe up to deliver another blow. Before the stroke could fall, a golden shape charged out from the darkness. Pentheus swept his soul shield between the executioner's descending axe and Arnhold. The weapon cracked against the enchanted barrier, the impact throwing the headsman back. Pentheus retaliated with a crushing swing of his maul that disrupted the shadowy essence of the murderous wraith. The undead creature flickered backwards, ectoplasm dripping from its tattered shape.
"Next time, I wish you would listen when I call you," Pentheus quipped.
Arnhold slapped his hand against his numbed shoulder, letting arcane heat drive down against the graveyard chill.
"Next time, I will," he promised.
Sabrot pointed his bony fist at the two stormcasts. A blackened blade manifested in his grip, conjured from the cairn where it had physically reposed.
"Destroy them!" he roared at his undead court. "Your king commands it!"
The wraiths responded to the shrouded king's decree, flying at the stormcasts in a ghostly swarm. Pentheus brought his maul flashing through the first few creatures, shattering their phantasmal shapes. His conquests were too few to stem the tide. The chain-wrapped nighthorns forced him to raise his shield and try to hold them back with its magic.
"Sigmar's will,"
Arnhold intoned as he drew the vial from his belt and cast it at the undead swarm. As the vial struck the wraiths, it shattered, unleashing the energies of the mammoth spirit. The crackling power raged through the ghosts, whipping across their ethereal shapes to scatter them about the hall in wispy tatters. The executioner alone from Sabrot's court defied the tempest Arnhold unleashed upon them. The creature came charging for the Aether Mage, its axe raised to cut him down. This time, Pentheus was too far away to intercede. There was no need for the Sequitur Prime to do so. Arnhold responded to the threat by whipping his staff across the wraith's arm. The glowing head seared through the spectral limb like a flash of lightning. The executioner reared back, the severed arm disintegrating in a flurry of ebon motes. He retained his grip upon the axe, but the weapon had too much solidity to be easily wielded single-handed. Before the wraith could compensate, Arnhold's magic again scorched the cloaked figure. This time, the staff raked upwards, flaring through his chest and up through his skull. Bisected from rib to cranium, the executioner struggled for an instant to retain such substance as he possessed, then exploded in a spray of blackened fragments. Sabrot shook his sword at the stormcasts.
"You have won nothing! I conjured my retainers from their graves once. I will do so again!"
Pentheus hefted his maul and would have rushed the throne, but Arnhold warned him back. It would need a different strategy to unseat the usurper. Arnhold glowered at the shrouded king.
"You have won nothing," he accused. "Look at this kingdom you have claimed. A dead place filled with dead things. Echoes and shadows. That is all you hold. Is this the kingdom you coveted, brother? Or is this just a mockery of that dream?"
A howl of anguish racked the shrouded king.
"Do not presume to speak to me of dreams, slave of Sigmar! What do you remember of your dreams, Volkard? You mention my wife and sons, but what of your own? Do you remember them?"
The skull face leered at Arnhold.
"Do you even recall their names? Or has Sigmar taken even that from you?"
Arnhold felt Sabrot's words cutting into him, opening all the uncertainties. The haze of his own past refused to be swept away. But when he looked at Sabrot, he thought he understood why.
"You remember everything, brother. You remember what happened long ago. You remember what you did and what was done to you. You remember what you wanted."
Sabrot leaned back upon the dragon seat.
"And you wish to know the secret of why I remember these things when you do not?"
The wraith's words gave Arnhold pause. Try as he might, he could not recall Volkard's own family. That memory had been lost, pounded from him upon the anvil of the apotheosis. How much had been lost there, and what would he be willing to pay to get it back?
"Yes, monster, I would know that secret," Arnhold confessed.
The shrouded king glared down at him.
"Hate, brother, that is the key. That is the force that is stronger than death and the grave. Hate makes you remember everything,
Arnhold conceded.
All except one thing. Who you were. Where is the man who was Sabrod? I see only his shadow.
He slapped his hand against his armored chest.
I have forgotten much, but I have not forgotten who I am. I remain the defender of the innocent, the champion of the good. I remain true to my purpose. All you do is clutch at a past that is gone and bitterly tell yourself it is enough.
It is more than you have, Volkard. More than you will ever have. You curse my dominion because you are too weak to claim it for yourself.
Arnholt shook his head.
Is that what you want, Sabrod? You want me to be jealous of this charnel house you call a palace, and this graveyard you call a kingdom? They are nothing, brother. Empty, a fitting dominion for a weak traitor. We were twins, he reminded Sabrod. It did not matter which of us was born first. We were both taught the same things, instructed in the same ways. We were both watched and judged. Either of us might have become priest-king of Khaza. They chose me, not because I was first, but because I was better.
Sabrod leapt down from the dragon seat, his frenzied wail thundering through the crypt. A blur of hate and shadow, the shrouded king lunged at Arnholt. The instant Sabrod was away from the throne, Arnholt raised his staff and sent a crackling spear of lightning stabbing into the wraith. The shrouded king was transfixed upon the magical beam, but even impalement was not enough to dull his ancient hate. Sabrod forced himself down the shocking lance, his ectoplasm streaming away as the etheric power seared his undead essence. His jaws opened in a scream of fury as he slashed his infernal sword into Arnholt's armored shoulder. Against another blow, the Sigmarite mail might have lessened the impact, but the blade Sabrod bore was imbued with a fragment of the merciless ire of Nagash himself. To the spectral weapon's innate power was added the rage of the creature that bore it, the centuries of brooding hate that had given the Shrouded King his kingdom. The blade tore through the armored pauldron, down into the flesh beneath, through muscle and bone, to cut a phantom path through the heart within. Ghostly as a cobweb, the wound did not bleed, flesh did not part, bone did not snap. The only evidence of the cut was the blemished mark on Arnholt's armor and the spectral cold that shivered through his soul. Sabrod leaned close to Arnholt, his skull briefly assuming once more the features he had worn in life.
You were never better than me, he snarled. You will never be better than me.
Sigmar found me worthy, Arnholt told the fading phantom. Nagash simply found you useful.
He watched as Sabrod's essence collapsed into a black mist that sank down into the cursed earth of his tomb.
Pentheus,
Arnholt called to the Sequitur Prime.
Attend me.
The Night Incantor stumbled and fell, the uncanny wound visited on him by Sabrod rapidly taxing his strength.
I am here, my lord, Pentheus assured Arnholt.
He took hold of the Aether Mage's arm and lifted him up from the floor. Arnholt looked into his brother's eyes.
Quickly, he said. The wraith's cut is a mortal one. I can feel my life being drained. Only my magic sustains me now.
What can I do?
Pentheus had a desperate quality to his voice.
Get me outside, Arnholt commanded. I must die, but I will not die in this place, not where he has fallen. Get me outside, where I can feel the presence of the God King looking down on me.
The battle had ended by the time Pentheus emerged from the barrow mound, helping the stricken Arnholt out from the tomb. The stains of blood and ectoplasm were the only evidence of the conflict. The forms of the fallen had vanished soon after being struck down, drawn back into the cursed earth, or else borne aloft to the celestial realm. Only the victors remained to meet the two stormcasts. Less than 40 warriors remained of the gilded sphere. The rest of Arnhold's retinue had fallen to the Night Haunts. Castigator Prime Neria was not among the vanquished. Pentheus felt relieved to see the impulsive warrior come marching towards him. Nerio hesitated when he saw the condition Arnhold was in.
"The Shrouded King," Pentheus explained. "Arnhold vanquished it, but not before the wraith cut him with its sword."
Nerio wrapped his arm around the knight incantor's other side and helped Pentheus bear him away from the tomb. "We knew something had happened when the Night Haunts lost interest in the battle. One moment they were all around us, the next they began to sink back into the ground."
"That must have been when Arnhold defeated their master," Pentheus said.
He glanced down at the insensible Aether Mage. The Night Incantor was scarcely breathing now, his body carrying with it a clammy chill. "Is there anything we can do?" Nerio asked, taking stock of Arnhold's state. Other Stormcasts joined them now, taking hold of the dying Night Incantor and helping carry him.
"Only what he asked of me," Pentheus said.
He nodded towards the lonely green plot.
"We will lay him down there, where King Volkard fell."
Nerio gave Pentheus a questioning look.
"Volkard? Is he not the one who wrote the history of Khazad that Arnhold was always studying?"
Pentheus did not answer. He was not sure what he could answer. From what he had overheard, Volkard and Arnhold were one and the same, but until Sabrot had named him such, Arnhold did not remember being the last priest king of Khazad. Yet for Volkard to have written the history resting in the Gilded Sphere's archives, he must have known much more when first he was reforged as a Stormcast. As they laid Arnhold down on the grass, Pentheus considered something else the Night Incantor had said. Something about remembering who he was rather than what he was. Perhaps, in some way, Arnhold had allowed those memories to be consumed by his reforging, while retaining other ones, memories that would serve his duty to Sigmar, the rites and rituals he had learned as an Aether Mage. Pentheus and the other Stormcasts backed away as a brilliant blue light engulfed Arnhold. The light shot upwards, vanishing in the grey sky. It left behind it only an empty patch of grass. Pentheus closed his eyes and thought about what was happening, even now in Sigmaron. Arnhold was being reforged, made ready to fight again. What would he remember of this strange homecoming, of this encounter with his treacherous brother? Would the name Volkart mean anything to him, or would that too be lost?
"Nerio," Pentheus said, turning back towards the barrow mound and pointing his maul at the dark entrance. "Before we march from this place, I want that tomb sealed, and we will raise a marker here for King Volkard, so that any who chance to pass this way again may remember."
That was Sacrosanct by C.L. Werner, read by John Banks. A Dirge of Dust and Steel by Josh Reynolds, read by John Banks. Eerie shrieks pierced the gloom. They reverberated through the broken field of toppled pillars and dust-shrouded statuary, riding the night wind. To Sathren Swiftblade's ears, there was both damnable pleasure and promise in those cries. The Lord Aquila repressed a shudder and bent forwards in his saddle.
"Faster, Gwyllith," he murmured into his mount's ear. "We're almost there."
The long-limbed, avian-headed griff-charger squalled in reply and increased her speed, despite the weight of the fully armoured Stormcast Eternal she carried on her broad back. Sathren glanced back, checking on his warriors. Half a dozen armoured vanguard paladors rode hard to either side of him. Like the Lord Aquila, they wore the silver and azure warplate of the hallowed knight Stormhost, and rode atop lean, leonine griff charges. The beasts were galloping flat out, the magic that flowed through their muscular frames enabling them to easily outpace their pursuers. As one, they bounded over the fallen statue of some long-forgotten warden king. The square, bearded face glared sightlessly at the silver-armoured riders and their steeds as they raced on across the broken ground. The Dwarden had once ruled this unforgiving land. Before the coming of Chaos, The oasis of Gazul had provided shelter for traders and pilgrims alike. Now it was a demon-haunted ruin, shrouded in shadows and dust. Out of the corner of his eye, Sathran caught a glimpse of a pack of lithe, inhuman shapes as they raced along parallel to the hallowed knights. The creatures, at once serpentine and avian, leapt and scrambled over fallen pillars and broken walls, moving with a speed that defied comprehension. They were urged on by their cackling riders, slim, hideously sensual demonettes, the handmaidens of Slaanesh. The demonettes resembled women with thick manes of snaky locks and pitiless, androgynous faces. Chitinous claws snapped wildly in the air as the creatures gesticulated obscenely. The hounds of pleasure were on the hunt, and Sathran and his warriors were their quarry.
"Looks like they've caught up with us at last, eh, Fascia?" Sathran called out.
"Took them long enough,"
Fascia, his second in command, replied. The Palador Prime peered back over her shoulder.
"Though I've not seen such a pack of beasts since the Bitterbuck, every demon in this desert must be on our tail."
"Good. The more of them, the better."
Sathran glanced back, following her gaze. Behind them, demons raced across the dust dunes with quicksilver grace. Brutal beastkin loped in their wake, braying to the wraith moon above. There were mortals among them as well, strange figures those, clad in everything from silks to furs, bearing weapons and musical instruments in their tattooed hands. Some rode atop demonic steeds, while others capered through the dust. Golden standards, decorated with looted tapestries, mirrors and flayed hides, bobbed above the monstrous cavalcade. It was not an army, a horde at best, a movable feast of frenzied indulgence, a celebration of blood and pain. And at its head, crouched atop a massive chariot made from bone and gold and pulled by a darting, hissing herd of demon steeds, was the host, the creature known as Amenhrith, the Soul Flayer. The Keeper of Secrets was a monster among monsters. It towered over the tallest of its followers, even squatting as it did on its nightmarish conveyance. Its elongated torso bore a quartet of long, milk-pale arms. One of these ended in a vicious, snapping claw, while the hands of the others rested upon the bejeweled hilts of the various blades sheathed about its person, beneath the cloak of skins it wore. Its head was that of a bull, with great curving horns capped with gold, and a ring of silver in its wide, flat nose. A mane of thick spines draped across the back of its neck, and its pale form was covered in the marks of ritual scarification, as well as various gemstones clinging to its chest like barnacles. Sathren's gaze was drawn to the largest of these, a massive ruby set between the demon's uppermost pectorals. Something flashed within the facets of the gem, and he turned away, frowning.
"Into the oasis! Go!"
Lone pillars and broken statues gave way to more substantial ruins. Stone watercourses and shattered aqueducts cast elongated shadows in the moonlight. And beyond them, the high, narrow summit of Gazul Baraz. The ruins spread out around the immense tower of limestone, spilling forth from the caverns beneath it, following the ancient watercourses. There were greater ruins by far within those caverns, stretching into the deep darkness. This was but the uppermost level of that vast fiefdom,
one the Soul Flayer had destroyed, and now claimed as its own.
"Swift Blade, beware!"
Fascia's shout was all the warning he needed. He ducked low, folding himself over Gwyleth's neck. A crustacean-like claw snapped closed where his head had been, as a demon steed drove itself into Gwyleth's side. The griff-charger stumbled and spun, shrieking in rage. Sathren hauled back on the reins and snatched his bolt-storm pistol from its holster. He leveled the weapon at the demonic rider and loosed a bolt. The bolt struck it in the eye and sent it tumbling from the saddle. Its serpentine steed staggered off balance, and Gwyleth smashed it from its feet, tearing open its elongated neck. More demons closed in, moving quickly. Sathren holstered his pistol and unsheathed his starbound blade. The blade gleamed like a distant star as he parried a darting claw and removed a demonette's head. It spun away, trailing gory locks. The rest swirled about him, cackling and shrieking, and he dealt with them swiftly. Even in death, they laughed, as if pain and pleasure were both but a singular sensation. The stink of strange incense rose from their glistening flesh. Black eyes, empty of all save malice, bored into him, and their smiles were at once alluring and repulsive. Their claws gouged his silver warplate, but failed to penetrate.
"Who will ride more swiftly than the storm winds?" he roared, laying about him. "Only the faithful," came the response, as the bolt-storm pistols of the others cracked and star-strike javelins hissed, further distracting his pursuers.
A moment later, Faisha's lunar blade joined his own as her griff-charger bore a squealing demon steed to the ground. The surviving demonettes retreated in disorder, a frustrated tenor to their shrieks. Sathryn hauled Gwyllith around and thumped her ribs. The griff-charger leapt back into motion, speeding to join the others, followed closely by Faisha.
"Keep moving!" Sathryn bellowed. "Our allies are waiting!"
They led their pursuers down a slope into a narrow defile between twinned limestone crags that acted as a gateway into the cavern city beyond. The crags had felt the touch of hammer and chisel at some point in antiquity, and alcoves had been carved into their inner slopes. Immense statues occupied these alcoves, ancient Dwadin kings and heroes, Sathryn thought. Their countenances were uniformly, grimly stoic, as if humour were somehow taboo among their folk. Having met them, Sathryn could well believe it. The Ghazal Zagars were a sombre folk, as befitted those who worshipped death. Their ancestors had taken the name of their fallen god for their own, in the dim, ancient epoch when Nagash, the undying king, had warred with the old gods of death and emerged supreme. Theirs was a society built on a legendary defeat and the bones of those it had claimed. Where they had once ruled, they now merely persisted, huddled in the ruins of former glory, waiting out the days. Hunted by creatures like those even now pursuing him and his warriors. The servants of the Soul Flayer had made these ruins their playground, but not for long, not if Sathren's gambit was successful. It was a simple enough plan. Bait the foe in and chew them apart, piecemeal. With the aid of Sathryn and his warriors, the Ghazal Zagars might rule the Sea of Dust once more, and in return, they would help the Swiftblades complete their mission.
"So far, so good," he muttered, as they passed through the shattered gateways and into the cavern city beyond.
It had been hacked from the stalactites and stalagmites of the vast caverns built into the very bedrock. Despite the situation, he could not help but marvel at the extent of that ancient undertaking. Crumbled structures and ruptured aqueducts rose over sloped avenues. Moonlight shone through great wells carved in the uppermost reaches of the cavern. The silvery radiance was reflected in the sluggish waters that still slithered through the broken aqueducts and poured down into the ruins in haphazard waterfalls.
"Look!"
Faisha called out. She pointed. Sathryn laughed.
"It appears our newfound allies are as good as their word."
A line of Dwadin waited for them, their stocky, armoured forms set in a rough battle line. They were clad in coats and cowls of burnished gromril. Each wore a steel war mask wrought in the shape of a stylized skull and carried a heavy baroque hand cannon. Dust sifted off the broad forms of the Dwadin iron drakes as they raised their weapons.
"Uzkul, ha!"
they roared, as one. The ancient drake guns belched fire as the vanguard paladors leapt over their wielders. The volley cut through the front rank of demons and mortals like a scythe of fire. Mortals fell screaming from their abominable mounts, and demons were ripped to shimmering rags. In the ensuing confusion, the Dwadin fell back into the ruins, reloading their weapons with a speed born of precision and experience, clearing the path. Monstrous chariots rattled on in pursuit over the broken bodies of the fallen. These were bombarded from on high by hurled chunks of stone. Many slewed wildly, crashing into one another or flipping and rolling. Demon steeds screamed as they were pulled to the ground or crushed beneath the tumbling chariots. Even the Soul Flayer's massive carriage was brought to a halt as a chunk of stone shattered one of its wheels and killed several of the beasts pulling it. The Keeper of Secrets leapt from the wreck with a bellow of frustration.
"Remind them that we're here, brothers and sisters," Sathryn shouted.
As one, the hallowed knights emptied their boltstorm pistols into the stalled horde. The Lord Aquila took aim at the soul flayer and sent a shot smashing into its chest. The demon whipped around, eyes narrowing. Sathren gave a mocking wave and glanced at Faisha.
Think that'll do it? I'd hate to think the beast is getting bored of us.
The demon flung out a claw and bellowed. Its followers surged past it, clambering over the wreckage in their eagerness to catch their prey. Faisha jerked on the reins of her griffcharger and turned the beast about.
I think so, my lord, she said.
Sathren laughed and jolted Gwyllith into motion. Drake guns spat death from the ruins as the Iron Drakes fired again. Followed by the echoes of that volley, the vanguard Paladors split up. Several turned back, arrowing through the ruins. They would harass the flanks and bleed the enemy, striking and fading as only they could. It was what they had been forged for. The rest continued on, racing down what had once been a grand avenue, pursued by the main body of the enemy. Sathren looked ahead. At the end of the avenue, between two crumbled structures, a shield wall of Dwadin warriors waited.
Ghazol Akit Har!
The words echoed through the cavern, accompanied by the crash of weapons against shields.
Uzkol! Uzkol! Uzkol!
The wall of Dwadin shields parted, allowing the Stormcast Eternals to pass through. Mourning bells, mounted on iron standard poles, tolled grimly as the Dwadin beat on their shields. Warriors wearing white vestments over their armor and golden war masks lifted stone tablets marked with crudely carved runes. As they paced up and down behind the battle line, they began to sing an eerie dirge. The sound rolled across the line and sent a chill down Sathren's spine.
That doesn't sound like any Dwadin battle song I've ever heard, Faisha said.
The vanguard Paladors slewed to a halt behind the shield wall, their griffchargers yowling in protest. The beasts hated standing still, almost as much as their riders.
They're mourning the dead yet to be, Sathren said, singing their souls to the caverns of their god.
Their god is dead.
I don't think they care, he gestured to the Dwadin. Can you support them until Thalkun gets his vanguard raptors into position?
Carders of Stormcast marksmen were even now scaling the broken heights of the Oasis city, seeking the best vantage points to deliver their lethal volleys. They would further bleed the foe, dispersing their strength. The enemy was caught fast in the jaws of the trap now, though they didn't yet realize it. Faisha nodded.
Aye, if we must. I still think one of us should go with you at least.
One soul, more or less, won't make a difference,
he gestured.
Remember, don't fight too hard. Let the beast through. If we're to win this, it must reach the oasis.
The shield wall was only there to blunt the initial rush of the foe. Once they'd bloodied them, the Dwadin would retreat, as the Iron Drakes had, and regroup in the ruins.
You can count on us, Faisha said. It's the Dwadin I'm worried about. They look set on dying here.
The dirge swelled up, rolling through the ruins. The song of a dying folk as they made what might be their last stand. Sathren frowned and shook his head.
They know what's at stake as well as you.
The Ghazal Zagaz had set the price for their aid, though it meant Dwadin blood would be shed, as well as that of his warriors. For centuries they had suffered the depredations of the Soul Flayer. Now, at last, they had a chance to free themselves, whatever the cost. Faisha met his gaze solemnly.
Much is demanded, she said.
Of those to whom much is given, he replied,
completing the canticle. They clasped forearms.
Fight well, sister, and don't let them catch you standing still.
Never,
Faisha said, cheerfully.
Hup!
She thumped her steed, and the griffcharger leapt into motion. Sathren watched her. She would circle through the ruins in order to flank the horde flooding down the avenue. Several of the remaining vanguard Paladors followed her, while the rest readied their javelins and drew their boltstorm pistols. Sathren twitched the reins and urged Gwyllith deeper into the ruins, seeking their heart. The beast growled low, unhappy at being denied the chance to savage the enemy.
Soon enough, old girl,
he said, stroking the bright green plumage on her neck.
Now, let's go bait ourselves a trap, eh?
Traps within traps. That was how the Swiftblades waged war. Sathren had learned the art of the oblique approach in those harsh, bloody days before he had been called to Sigmar's side. Those lessons had stayed with him, even as he had been reforged, body and soul, on the anvil of the apotheosis. And if there was one place where such an approach was needed, it was Shaiish. The Sea of Dust was a harsh land of broken mountains and dust storms that could strip flesh from bone as easily as gilt from Sigmarite. It had its secret roads and hidden paths, and the Swiftblades had sniffed them out, one by one. This was not merely aimless wandering on their part, but a quest given to them by the God King himself. The Swiftblades had been sent to Shaiish to find the ruins of Caddo, the City of Crows. And in that broken city was the Corvine Gate, an ancient realm gate linking Shaiish with Azir. Only a scant few such transdimensional apertures remained in the wake of the War of Death and Heaven. Sigmar had commanded that it be rediscovered and reopened. Sathren did not know why they sought it or what might await them there, nor in truth did he care. That the quarry was named was enough. He would find it, or perish in the attempt, and explain his failure to the God King in person. But first, he had a demon to slay, and a bargain to make good on. He smiled. It was the Soul Flayer he'd set this trap for, and it had proved very obliging thus far. The creature had been easy to provoke. One whiff of fresh prey, and it had been on their trail. Then, in his experience, demons were many things, but rarely shrewd. They had provoked and teased it for days, leading it into the ruins. Now it was time for the trap to snap shut. A thrill of premature satisfaction surged through him. He forced it down. The hunt wasn't done yet. Gwyllith loped through the ruins, carrying him down long aqueduct-lined avenues towards the central plaza, where the waters of the oasis still ran fresh and clean within the great temple of Ghazal. The remains of that edifice rose up around the softly bubbling spring like a forest of stone. It was a massive rotunda of pillars and glowering statues, as with everywhere in the city, the faces of the dead had been captured forever in stone. Sathren could hear the soft susurrus of the water as it swirled about its stony prison, deep within the forest of pillars. It filled the watercourses, which stretched from the base of the temple and connected to the closest aqueducts. He hauled back on the reins, bringing Gwyllith to a stop before the vast, flat steps leading up into the temple. A group of Dwardin awaited him. They wore soot-blackened robes and armour, and their beards and hair were covered in ashes. Some carried weapons, but most had their hands free. They were rune singers, the last members of an ancient priesthood. Once they had guided their kin through life, now they warded their souls in death. One of them stepped forwards.
"You have returned."
The war mourner of the Ghazal Zagars was clad in black, and his armour was bronze. Several heavy tomes were chained to him, the cover of each marked with the Khazalid rune of death. He bore an iron staff, surmounted by a dirge bell and a heavy hammer. Unlike his companions, he wore no mask, though his face had been painted with ash and soot to resemble a skull.
"As I promised, Elder Judd," Sathren said, as he slid from Gwyllith's back.
Heart pounding, he could hear the whistle-crack echo of the hurricane crossbows wielded by the vanguard raptors. Thalkun and his warriors were unleashing a blistering fusillade against the pleasure-maddened warriors flooding into the ruins. But even that wouldn't hold the Soul Flayer back for long. Nor did he wish it to.
"Is our trap ready?"
"It waits, manling,"
Judd frowned.
"Are you certain the Soul Flayer will come?"
A roar of frustration echoed across the ruins. Sathren smiled.
"Fairly certain."
He clapped Gwyllith on the haunch.
"Go. You know what to do."
The Griffcharger screeched and turned, scraping its beak against his war mask. He caught hold of its feathered skull.
"Go, sister, and wait for my call."
The great beast squalled and loped swiftly into the forest of pillars, tail lashing. Sathren drew his starbound blade and laid it across his shoulder. The avenue trembled beneath his feet. He turned, keen gaze sweeping across the ruins. He felt no fear, only the anticipation of a hunter who closes fast on his moment to make a kill. "Take your kin and get out of sight, Runesinger. Best we do not distract our prey." Judd hesitated. The Dwadin was old, even by the standards of his people. So old that he might have witnessed his people's fall in person. His hair and beard were the colour of ash mixed with snow, and his weather-beaten flesh resembled worn leather. But his voice was strong, as were his shoulders.
"Are you certain you wish to do this, Manling? It may well mean your death."
"Then we are in the right realm for it, no?"
Sathren looked down at him.
"I swore an oath, and I will hold to it with every breath in my body."
Judd nodded.
"Aye, you did at that, and so did we. If we are victorious, we will guide you to the ruins of the City of Crows, and we will aid you in opening the way for your kin as best we can."
He patted the hammer that rested in the crook of his arm.
"And if we fail, we will add your name to the great dirge."
He smiled mirthlessly.
"It is the least we can do."
Sathren laughed.
"Don't start singing yet. There's never been a foe to catch me if I didn't wish to be caught."
He jerked his head.
"Go. It's close. As soon as I lead it into the temple..." "We know what to do, Manling, and so do they."
Judd glanced meaningfully at the statues that glared down at them. Sathren grunted, trying to ignore the chill that swept through him. In Shaiish, the dead did not rest easy, whatever their race.
"Let us hope so. I have no wish to fight the dead as well as a demon."
Judd gave him a gap-toothed grin.
"Have no fear on that score. They know their enemy."
He turned and barked an order in his own tongue. Swiftly, the runesingers disappeared into the ruins. The Dwadin of Ghazul Baraz had learned well the art of vanishing from sight. So skilled were they that even Sathren's warriors had been impressed.
"We have much to learn from each other," he murmured. "Perhaps after this is over."
An old refrain, but a comforting one. It implied an end to strife, something he had not truly believed possible in his mortal life. But now he had hope. That, in the end, was perhaps the greatest gift that Sigmar had bestowed upon him. He sank to one knee and planted his sword point first into the stones before him. Somewhere in the cavern, he heard the tolling of dirge bells. He could see the battle lines breaking in his mind's eye. The Dwadin would retreat, and the foe would splinter, greedy for victory. Softly, he began to pray. As a mortal, his faith had not extended itself to prayers. Here, now, it was another weapon in his arsenal. Each canticle was a wall, a gate, a tower, defending him from what was to come. He was still praying when the first of the demons burst into view. Smoothly, without missing a beat, he rose, starbound blade hissing out. A demonette fell, its unnatural skull cleft in two. Another leapt on him, claws clacking. He swept it off him and sent it crashing into a pillar. Before it could rise, he pinned it to the pillar with his blade. He twisted the sword, silencing its shrieks. Two more came at him and met their end. More of them loped down the avenue. Some bore wounds, their limbs stained with black ichor. Over their sibilant cries, he could hear the crash of steel and the shouts of his warriors echoing through the cavern. They had fallen back as he ordered, opening the way for his prey. He smiled and lunged to meet the demonettes. Before he could reach them, a sudden jangle of bells caused them to stop short. With disconsolate hisses, the creatures retreated. They flowed back up the avenue around a massive form that strode into view.
"You have teeth, then. Good."
The Soul Flayer. The demon's voice was like syrup over coals.
"It is always better when the prey has teeth. A bit of fight makes the triumph all the sweeter."
It flung back the edge of a cloak of mortal flesh and hair, heavy with plundered Dwadin gold, and clashed its bronze braces, setting the dozens of bells that hung from them ringing.
You've led me a pretty chase, little glowbug. I followed your scent for days. The stink of your soul teases me in exquisite ways. It is like lightning on the tongue.
You haven't caught me yet, Sathren said. His hand dropped to his boltstorm pistol. But here I am. Come and get me. He studied the gems that marked the demon's flesh. Each one flickered with an inner light, some of them brighter than the rest. Thanks to Elder Judd, he knew that the gemstones held the souls of those slain by the demon. It was called the Soul Flayer for good reason. The Keeper of Secrets bared lupine teeth in a hideous parody of a smile.
I will, but in my own time. The hunt is ever more pleasing than the kill.
It spread its uppermost arms.
Why else would I leave the stunted inhabitants of this wasteland with their souls intact?
Not all of them, Sathren said. The stink of the demon flooded his nostrils. It was a cloying fog, like perfume over rot. He shook his head to clear it. The demon's head twitched, like a bull shaking away flies.
Oh, does word of my magnificence reach so far, then?
A bifurcated tongue slid across the thicket of fangs.
I am flattered.
A claw tip caressed the ruby. In its facets, something that might have been a face contorted in agony